This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Hi, and welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. My name's Martine and I'm an alcoholic. The purpose of this show is to increase public awareness of Alcoholics Anonymous as an effective means of recovery from the disease of alcoholism. Our show has two parts. First, we talk a bit about alcoholism, what it is and what AA can do to help. Then we'll interview a recovering alcoholic who is an active member of AA. I'm now going to ask our guest to read the AA preamble, which is read at the start of every AA meeting.
Hi, my name's Anthony and I'm an alcoholic. AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorse nor oppose any cause. Our prime purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
So what is alcoholism? Alcoholism is a disease, not a disgrace. There's no shame in having an illness or a disease. An unusual feature of this disease is it will do whatever it can to convince you you don't have it. However, once it has a hold on you, the progression of symptoms is like the classic disease model and the victim is as helpless as a sufferer of cancer. If you are an alcoholic, you're at the beginning of a long road that usually ends in one of three places: prisons, institutions, or death. If you think this sounds dramatic, we can assure you that our collective experience shows this to be true. The challenge is to convince the alcoholic to admit that they need help and become willing to seek it. Denial is a major symptom of alcoholism. The alcoholic is often the last one to recognise it and admit that they have it. Our definition of alcoholism is that it is an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. The allergy is the physical aspect of the disease. Having had the first drink, the phenomenon of craving develops and we lose control over when we will stop drinking. The old saying is, one is too many and a thousand is never enough. And yet, because of the obsession of the mind, the mental aspect of the disease, the alcoholic is compelled to keep picking up the first drink. This makes us powerless. We often hear from sober alcoholics that many doubted whether life could be fun without alcohol. Fortunately, those same people report that their lives have improved dramatically since they became sober. The 12-step program of recovery, which is discussed at meetings and which is outlined in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, is how we get sober and maintain our sobriety one day at a time. This program has a proven track record of helping otherwise helpless alcoholics to achieve long-term sobriety and recovery. It has taught us how to enjoy life sober. Okay, for anyone who's just joined us, you're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. We're just about to interview an AA member who is going to share their experience with alcoholism. So let's meet our guest. I just wonder if you'd like to introduce yourself and give us a quick sketch of who you are.
My name's Anthony and I acknowledge that I'm an alcoholic. I grew up in Christchurch. I'm a Cantabrian through and through. I'm the youngest son of my family. I have one sister and three other brothers. I was born in 1954, so as you can hear, that makes me 66. And I had a happy childhood. I came from a middle-class family. And I went to a church school, and I think I felt that I was fairly privileged to do that. However, I always felt out of sorts. I never really felt as if I belonged. And the matter of the course was that when I left school, I went to art school, and I then got introduced to alcohol and drugs, and it was from that point that I started the downward spiral. However, I never acknowledged that at the time, and it wasn't until many years later that I came to the point where I needed to do something about it.
So you said that you started drinking when you were at art school. Mm. Why? Can you tell us why you drank and what alcohol did for you?
Well, it was the 70s, and of course it was a new age of Aquarius, as they say, and there was the new dawning and changes in society in New Zealand, and I really felt as if I was part of that. When I was at art school, I got introduced to alcohol, and at that point I felt as if I belonged, because I never really felt as if I belonged in society. I was a wee bit different. I enjoyed art, music, dancing, and at that stage all my brothers, who were a generation before me, were very much the Kiwi rugby racing and beer, and of course I felt completely out of sorts. But when I started to experiment at art school with alcohol, it led me into other drugs as well. But alcohol was the nemesis for me. Initially, it gave me the ability to feel as if I was okay. It gave me the ability to do things that I never could do on my own. I was very shy. I really always felt as if I was never good enough. And once I had a drink, all of a sudden it was like the elixir of life. It gave me the ability to be a lot more convivial, a lot more fitting into the society.
And how would you describe how you drank? Was it socially alone? Did you binge drink? Were you a daily drinker?
Well, at that time when I did drink, as soon as I had a drink, right from the very beginning, I lost control. I never saw it at the time, but once I started to drinking, I couldn't stop. I wanted this good feeling to keep on going. And of course, it would catch up with me. And by the time I was intoxicated, I got to the stage where I couldn't stop. And I didn't want to stop because I wanted the good times to keep on going. But of course, alcohol as it is also a depressant. So I ended up being a very sad sack type of drinker. I'd be sitting in the corner completely and absolutely stoned, out of my brain as well as drunk, and I was more withdrawn.
So it sounds like you felt that it was a problem relatively early on. Did you ever try and stop?
I tried many a times to stop, yes, I did. I think that in the back of my mind I knew it wasn't right, but at the same time I found that I was damned if I stopped and I damned if I kept on drinking, because initially what happened was it would make me feel good, but when I stopped I'd start that downward spiral of depression again, and I needed to have a drink to bring myself happy again, you know, to elevate my emotions and feelings. But of course, the more I drank, the more withdrawn from society I became. And people didn't want to know me. They just didn't want to associate with me. But of course, I was going through a lot of depression too. So I thought that basically what I was, and that's just a person that had depression.
So could you describe your rock bottom for us? Had you lost jobs? What were your relationships with families and friends and loved ones like at the time?
Okay, well, I need to... When I left art school, one of the first jobs I had was working in a retail store as a display artist. And there I met my first wife. And I was just barely 19, 20 at the time. And we got married, but unfortunately we were both heavy drinkers and into drugs, and our whole social life was revolved around the music, art, alcohol, LSD, drugs. And although we thought we were adults, we in fact weren't. We were very immature, and we had two children, and that marriage lasted less than about 8 years.
Right.
And during that period of time, I was committed once or twice to a mental institution.
Mm-hmm.
Once into Sunnyside. I also went to a private one, which was Calvary Psychiatric Clinic, which was in Caledonian Road. And I was treated for schizoaffective disorders or depression. Thereafter, very morose periods of deep, dark thoughts, and also attempted suicides. So that marriage broke up, and I basically was on my own again, and I went through Calvary Clinic and started to put together a resemblance of a normal life. And I got to the stage where I would get a new job in the art field, and I became a photographer and graphic designer and started to put my life back together again. But the drinking still was in the background, and while I wasn't having the depressive periods as the same, I managed to self-medicate and to manage it, even though I was taking medication for my depression at the same time. But I found it very, very difficult to sustain any long period of abstinence. And of course, when that happened, the whole cycle of depression, drinking, elevation, almost like a bipolar, but I'm not bipolar, but you had those two contrasts continually through my life, the ups and the downs. They're very, very dramatic, very dramatic. And of course, I found it very difficult to see that the alcohol was the problem, because I knew I had depression.
Yeah.
And at that stage, I was working in another retail store doing promotions and design work, and relatively successful, started to get accepted, but I would always get to a peak where I'd get so far up in my career, and then all of a sudden I would sort of pull it all down again.
Right.
And this was just an ongoing thing. But I met my second wife, and she was an accountant, and we ended up being married. We didn't have any children. That marriage lasted about 15 years, but it was very rocky. She didn't drink at all, and I thought I was going to be safe.
Right.
But of course, the truth was that I was still drinking in the background, and of course, the jobs, the depression, the geographicals. We moved to Nelson, we moved to different locations of the South Island. We also changed jobs, and that I'd get a better offer or something like that. Mm-hmm. So we were, she was just tagging along, really, to be honest. But in the back of my mind, I always knew that maybe if I didn't drink, things could be a wee bit different. And at various times I even brought it up with my GP, and he sort of said, well, you know, how much are you drinking? And the usual story would be, oh, just the same as everybody else. But it wasn't just the drinking, it's what it was doing to me mentally.
Yeah.
It was the after effect, to be honest.
I wonder if you could tell us how you found your way to your first AA meeting and what it was like.
It was in 1990. I was committed to the mental institution again after a suicide attempt. And I was sitting in the clinic, and a male nurse sort of said to me, well, if you think you're so clever, how come you're here? Because I always felt I had the answer to the solution, and that if only I did this or I only did that, all this problem would go away. And after they gave me a bit of a screening there, they sent me to Kennedy Clinic, which meant that I was detoxed, because they said, to be truthful, you're a chronic alcoholic.
Right.
And that was the first time I'd actually had that as a diagnosis, if as such. In a way, it sort of thought, oh, now I know what's wrong with me. Mm-hmm. So it didn't bother me in that respect, because in the back of my mind, I knew that I, as soon as I drank, I couldn't predict what was going to happen. Mm. And then I was very fortunate that after Kennedy, they sent me to a place called Mahu, which is about two doors down the road from Kennedy in the Hill Morton Hospital grounds. And I had to attend there all the time for about 3 weeks. And I did the Mahu course. And during that period of time, it was suggested that maybe going to AA might help me. And they had the odd person coming in from outside, from AA, sharing their story. And I think from that point on, I could see that there was something different than where I had been before as far as so-called solutions. This was a different option for me. So when they said that I could go out as a day person from Mahu and back to my flat, which I really dreaded because I was alone and I was living alone, I was really worried about my isolation. And I really thrived on being able to share with other people, and especially people who seemed to understand me.
Yeah.
So I was taken to my first meeting at I can't remember what it was called now, EastEnders. Mm-hmm. And I sat in that meeting, and I'd had a bit of clean time up, so I could hear what was happening. And I thought, hey, I don't believe this. These people are going home. They've got bright eyes. They seem to be laughing. They seem to have cars. They seem to have wives. They seem to have jobs, you know. But their stories were so true. I knew they were genuine stories, and yet they were able to have these things. And I thought, well, maybe there's hope. Maybe, just maybe, they've got an answer for me.
Okay, so how did you manage to stay sober?
One of the people that picked me up designated himself as what we call a sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a fairly outdoorsy person, and I loved climbing and tramping. I'd done that in my past, and he suggested perhaps we can go out on the weekend for a tramp, and we did that. And that started a relationship with somebody that had got a long-term sobriety with me. And doing that, I also felt as if I found a friend.
Yeah.
And he would help me and guide me through the steps, but I was very thirsty for it. I absolutely knew that this was my last stop. If I didn't do that, I was going to be dead. I could not see me ever being able to survive in this world without something to guide me by.
Yeah.
And he was an incredibly compassionate person, and he didn't tell me what to do, and I think that was the great thing. But he always used to ask the question, are you sure that this is what you think you should be doing? And, of course, he knew that I was a thinker, and he knew how to try and stop that too much as well. But he guided me, and he said 90 meetings, 90 days. He was an old-fashioned recovered person, and he said, that's what you've got to do. And basically he said, how badly do you want this? And I met one or two other people, and I'd go around to their place. I was living in Sydenham. I'd go around to their place, have a game of cards, and we would walk into town, go to a meeting, and walk home again, you know. He said it had to be, I had to do the work.
Yeah. And how did you cope with difficulties that came up, you know, while you were sober?
Oh, I was messy. I was like a little child who's still just, you know, in naps. And thank God they loved me enough to sort of pick up the mess after me now and then. But they didn't take responsibility for me.
Yeah.
And they allowed me to make the mess too. They never sort of said, well, you know, what you're doing is wrong. You should do it this way or do it that way. They just loved me.
Yeah.
And they said, well, look, you know, if you're really, really desperate, pick up the phone, talk to somebody. Don't stay isolated.
Yeah.
And bit by bit, things got a wee bit better. But I mean, I still didn't have a job. I had nobody else in my life other than AA. And oh, woe was me, because I'd destroyed a couple of marriages and all the rest of it. And I still had to fight this idea that I wasn't good enough. But I was always told in a meeting that no matter where you've been, no matter how far you've been down, there's always hope. And I saw it in their lives.
Yeah.
It was an action program.
And how would you describe your life today then? How you feel and how your life has changed with all the years of recovery in between that?
Well, in the last 27 years, I managed to go back to university. I studied. I became an alcohol and drug clinician. I also did postgrad studies and did studies in coexisting disorders. And I worked in the field for 15 years before I retired. That never would have happened if I had kept on drinking. I feel that I have reached a level in my life today that is just beyond my wildest dreams. Mm. Honestly, beyond my wildest dreams. And it hasn't all been easy either, because I had a graphic design business which I had to close in sobriety. I lost my mother in sobriety. I lost my father in sobriety. I lost another business in sobriety. But I haven't been locked up. I haven't had to take medication for depression anymore. I've been married the longest that I've ever been married before, and very, very happily. So in spite of the real world still being out there, I've been able to navigate through it and still enjoy life. I love my life today. Absolutely wonderful. Yeah. It's fantastic.
How big a part was service in your sobriety and recovery?
Oh, well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, if you can't give it away, service is critical.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be on a big level. When I first went to the meetings, it was just cleaning out the ashtrays. I mean, I used to smoke. And I mean, I used to, the rooms, you could cut the knife with them in the early days. Oh, my God. It was unbelievable. So it was cleaning up, doing the dishes. And often those times were when people would talk to you and you would glean more information about what life is about, a camaraderie, a feeling that you are participating in doing something. And then later on, of course, it was just all of a sudden in a meeting, I was told, oh, by the way, you're treasurer. Or in the Mahu, old Mahu meeting on the Sunday morning, I started to be a treasurer. Then it would be secretary or GSR or something like that. And I think that I'd go on the list for 12 steps as well.
Yeah.
And but I'm a person that is far better to eye to eye. I love people, absolutely love people. And so I keep it fairly basically now. I go to meetings, I'll always look for the person that's the newcomer, one that looks frightened and scared and not knowing where they are and what's happening to them, and just say to them, you're okay.
Yeah.
You're in a good place.
So I wonder what you would suggest for any listener. So if we've got listeners out there and they think they've got a problem with drinking, what advice would you give to them?
I don't give advice. But I do say, pick up the phone and talk to somebody. Talk to somebody that's been before you. And that often happens by picking up the helpline or picking up the AA number. There's many journeys that people take before they find that AA is right for them. So the first step is saying, I have a problem. And if you say that and you can say it to another person, I think that's the first start. And be prepared to look for the similarities is another important thing. They might be a different sort of person, but if you can hear the similarities, the loneliness, the sadness, the internal turmoil, and you hear that these people have found a way to walk through that, maybe, just maybe, AA might be right for you. Because it's not just about the drinking, it's about the living.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing your story with us. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I just hope that if people find something that I've said that may encourage them and to realise that things can be different.
Excellent. For our listeners, if you've related to anything that you've heard or would like some information about Alcoholics Anonymous, you can look us up on the web at www.aa.org.nz or call us on 0800 AA Works. There are over 60 meetings in Canterbury, so it's likely there's one near you. Join us next week to hear from more AA members sharing their experience. Our show airs every Monday at 5:30 on Plains FM and repeats on Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. You can also find podcasts of our past shows on the Plains FM website at plainsfm.org.nz, or you can download, subscribe and listen to podcasts on iTunes and Spotify. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for listening. And remember, if you want to drink, that's your business. But if you want to stop, we can help and you don't have to do it alone. We'll now close with a serenity prayer as we do in every AA meeting. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. You've been listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show on Plains FM 96.9.